You are listening to the podcast When Life Gives You Lemons, presented by me, Emma Levy. Having worked with elite athletes for most of my career, it's always intrigued me that a significant number of high-performing individuals have encountered some form of adversity earlier in their lifetime. My fascination into this grew when I had my own brush with adversity, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer in May 2020, in the midst of the global pandemic at the age of 36. During this period, I questioned whether it was my positive mindset or maybe something deeper, which enabled me to bounce back and to train and compete for a triathlon just 1 month following completion of all active cancer treatment. The goal of this podcast is to explore this concept further by meeting a variety of high-performing individuals who have experienced adversity, but who have come back stronger. Today, I'm welcoming Taylor James to the podcast. Taylor is the host of the Waffle Shop podcast, the music and mental health podcast. In his podcast, he talks to his guests about their mental health, their coping mechanisms, and the music that soundtracks it all. Taylor started the podcast as part of his own therapy when he nearly lost his mum following a failing during a simple operation. After that incident, his mental health spiraled negatively, and he found that by sharing and opening up on his podcast, he was able to re-engage with life and feel much better. 4 years on, not only does he have a top-rated podcast, but he also now runs his own studio, helping other podcast creators achieve their goals. So I think it's another great example of someone thriving beyond their adversity, and I can't wait to get stuck in. Taylor, so good to have you here in the London studio.
That made me feel really emotional.
Oh dear, so early on.
Yeah, like morning. No, thank you. It's a pleasure. Like, I stand with everything that you... like stand for as well. Like, it's genuinely an honour to be here.
Oh, thanks. I think we're going to have a great chat. And I thought it'd be good for our listeners if you could just start by telling us your story and how you got into podcasting.
Yeah. So around 7 years ago now, my mom had an operation that went horribly wrong. And in a matter of hours, life as I knew it completely flipped 180. And still to this day, I'm still living that same kind of situation.
It was a simple operation as well.
Simple. She had a slipped disc. Yeah. And she was in a lot of pain. She had it operated on, came home, and there was something that wasn't right. Like, and at the time, I thought she was overdosing on her medication that she'd been prescribed because she was a little bit out of it. At one point, she didn't really know who I was, who my sister was. So it was all like alarm bells, like something, this shouldn't really be happening. So I rang a paramedic and they said, like, we need to get her to hospital. I think she's on a lethal cocktail of medication. So obviously at that time, I was still thinking it's the amount of kind of like painkillers and stuff that she was on. When we got to hospital, what was actually happening was the spinal fluid was leaking and it had collected at the bottom of her spine and became infected. So obviously with any infection, you're kind of here, there and everywhere. And then I got told by the doctor, like, okay, well, we just need to drain it. Like, it's very simple. Like, you know, you can head on home now. So I left the hospital around, I think it was around midnight, because my sister was actually starting her GCSEs the day after. So I thought, right, well, I need to be at home to make sure, like, my sister's up, out the door, ready for her first exam. Then when she finally left for her first exam, that's when I got a call to say, Taylor, you need to come to the hospital. We need to make a decision in regards to your mum's brain. And me being me, I was like, no, it's her back. And I'm like, no, you need to get here, it's her brain. And then when I got there, it was literally like walking onto the set of Casualty. I had these medical professionals, doctors, surgeons saying things like brain damage and we don't know like if she's going to survive this. And it was still to this day, I don't know how I got through that, but it was just kind of like the emotion in a certain way got switched off. And then it was like, I need to deal with the facts here. Yeah. So then, yeah, what had happened was when she was lying down, the spinal fluid had traveled up the spine to the bottom of her brain and then caused a blockage and then caused basically the brain was starved of oxygen. Oh. So, yeah, at that stage, we didn't know what the damage was. And then it was just a complete and utter whirlwind.
Wow.
From that point.
And you were just like the young son having to make the decisions And you weren't very old at the time, were you?
No, I was 27 at the time. Mm. So I was in the process of like getting ready to like move out, like, you know, go off and do what I needed to do. So it was literally like, okay, the universe was like, nope, yeah. Not today. That's not happening for you. Like now it was, I essentially became like a dad, a homeowner, like overnight, all whilst trying to kind of navigate my own career, like my relationships. So
was it down to anyone's failings?
See, it depends on who you ask with this, because I'm a big believer in if they hadn't have done what they had done, my mom might not be here. However, if it was done right the first time, I don't think we'd be in this situation at all. So it's quite bittersweet. Yeah. And I have to not focus on that, because this situation could be so much worse. Like yesterday was Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So the fact that 7 years on, after all those kind of times of being told, your mom's not going to make it. It's a real kind of like, it's a lot. But I think a lot of people kind of like when I tell it, and sometimes when I have these kind of days with my mom, we kind of scroll back, like on photos and stuff. There was a huge period of time when we didn't know the extent of the damage. She was in like a medically induced coma.
For how long?
It was around 3 months she was in the medically
induced coma. And that was when your sister was doing her GCSEs?
When she was doing her GCSEs. And then it got to a stage where they said to me, we're going to be turning the life support machine off now. Like, we can't do any more. Like, it's down to her. And I still don't know how I feel about this side of the story, but I remember sitting with the doctor and saying, like, my sister's going through her exams. Mm-hmm. Like, if this happens, it's not going to kind of sit well with her, like, obviously. So I practically begged the surgeon to keep the life support machine on whilst my sister was going through her exams. And he literally made me give him the last date and time of the exam. And they were going to turn it off.
Wow.
But what it did do, it gave my mom an additional like 5 to 6 days of, I guess, recovery. So when the time actually came for them to turn the machine off, she started breathing by herself.
Oh my goodness.
And then it was like, okay, this is when the rehabilitation starts.
Yeah. What do you put that down to, that she was able to breathe?
I don't know. I really don't know. My mom's very... She's a phenomenal woman, like a phenomenal mom. And, you know, like you hear these stories that people like hang on until certain family members get there and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I don't know whether it's a spiritual thing. I don't know if it's like religion. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I just think even now, like, I think she's got so much more to give, and she seems just to give me hell on a daily basis, to be fair. So I think that's probably why she's
probably
still
a good
yet.
Thing. So how is tough. She now?
She's okay. Like, she, so following obviously the brain damage, the part of the brain that was damaged was like her motor skills. So she was a very active, fit woman. She used to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning, like sometimes like hoovering her AstroTurf. Like, it was, yeah. So to see her now requiring 24-hour care because she can't use her legs, she's got very limited like upper body strength, but from a brain point of view and like personality, like, she is 110% still my mom.
Yeah.
It's just the rest of the body that kind of doesn't kind of play ball.
Yeah.
But it took a long time to get to that point.
Yeah.
There was a lot of long days, and there were days when it was like 12 hours I was by her bedside, like squeeze my hand kind of thing, because I don't know why she did this, but the only voice that she was responding to was mine.
Wow.
So there was a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on a 27 year old's shoulders.
Yeah. And a lot of arguments with doctors as well.
Really?
Because there was one doctor in particular who was convinced she had locked-in syndrome, which meant she could only communicate with her eyes.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was going in there and I was saying, like, can you point to the door? It was very faint, but like she was following like very like simple instructions. So yeah, there was a lot of kind of, I guess, gut feelings and like go with your gut, and almost put myself in my mom's shoes, because if the shoe was on the other foot, my mom would, she's a fighter, clearly.
Yeah. And you fought for her as well.
100%. And I Yeah, wow. Always will.
So you were battle mode on, obviously, during that period when she was in hospital. And then did she go to a rehab home? Like, at what point were you able to kind of step away a little bit?
I haven't. Still, it's something that I actually really struggle with. Even like going on holiday and stuff, like it takes me a long time to kind of relax.
Yeah.
But I think the time when she was able to communicate, because it happened in May, she didn't speak properly until October. And it was even then, it was very kind of like faint, and you had to really kind of, it's almost like learning a second language. It's a lot better now, like, and you can FaceTime her and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it was when she started to be able to communicate, and I felt like I didn't have to be there quite as much. But I think the pandemic as well, because at that time we weren't able to go into the home where she now lives. We weren't able to obviously hug her for well over a year. But I think it was the pandemic that kind of taught me that this is out of your control.
Yeah. And it's actually okay to step away.
Yeah.
And it's important for your mental health as well.
Massively.
Yeah.
Massively.
So tell us then how that journey got you into podcasting.
It was the mental health side of things that really kind of kicked it all off. I still remember there was this day where my mum was in hospital and I was sat down by another doctor and told, like, if she fights this and wins, obviously it's great, but there's literally nothing more that we can do. And I remember walking down this corridor in the hospital. I don't know why they're so long. So I remember leaving the room after being told that by the doctor, and I just kind of like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I do not want to keep living my life the way it's being lived. And that wasn't a case of me wanting to kind of like leave completely. There were dark thoughts. There was a lot of kind of, what am I doing this for? Like, because every kind of person or situation, every time I felt like I was making progress, I just always seemed to be doing the wrong thing. The right thing by my mom, but the wrong thing for everyone else. And yeah, it got to a stage where I was just like, I just can't live like this anymore. My sense of humor had gone, like I was struggling to maintain relationships. I was struggling to talk. And I was like, something needs to happen. Something needs to change because I'm scared of where this is going. And I was very, very fortunate that my mum pulled through once again. And I had a conversation with the therapist in the home that my mum lives in. And I had about 2 to 3 sessions.
Okay. So you were given those sessions. Yeah. But you probably had to ask for them.
Yeah.
So you actually had to reach out for help.
I think they could see it as well, because I think they'd seen me from almost very early on in the journey to where I was now, and I wasn't Taylor anymore. And I had 2 to 3 sessions. The doors kind of like started to open. I started to really kind of communicate how this has affected me, because for a huge period of time, like, I couldn't talk about how this has affected me because my mom has it so much worse.
Yeah.
And I kind of completely neglected my own needs, my own mental health. And then the pandemic hit.
So it was like,
So I was like, oh, okay, well, the floodgates have opened now. I need to start talking about it. And I still to this day do not know why I recorded that first episode. I really don't know, but I'm so grateful that I took that step and I said, you know what, I need to talk.
Yeah. So did you just literally do it in your room?
Literally on my dining room table with my wired headphones.
Yeah.
And yeah, I haven't looked back since. Like, it has been the biggest blessing, I think, in disguise. I mean, it's not even in disguise, it's a big waffle.
Yeah.
It's like, there's something you can't disguise it, even if you wanted to.
And you started off just telling your story, didn't you?
Yeah.
And do you remember feeling like a kind of a relief?
Yeah.
To get it off your chest.
Yeah. Because I felt like so isolated in the situation. Like, I didn't know if anyone else's parents had been through this, or, you know, is anyone else out there who has had to now take on all these responsibility. But when I first released that episode, I logged out of all social media. Like, I freaked out basically, because I was like, people are going to judge me for, you know, talking about this.
It's quite revealing.
Yeah, it's really, and to fair, and I don't think that feeling goes still to this day. Like, it's a very intimate, it's very vulnerable, but it's also, it's really kind of makes you strong.
Yeah. Well, I always talk about finding strength in our vulnerabilities.
100%.
Yeah, because both of our podcasts were born out of our own trauma. Yeah. And again, with me, I do kind of joke about the fact that it is my therapy. Because I don't
Thousands
see a therapist.
We've saved.
Yeah.
Thousands. Honestly, I'd recommend. I mean, no, if you need to go to therapy, go to therapy, obviously. But
or start a podcast.
Yeah, or start a podcast. But it has, because there was a lot of, you know, when I first started to understand my mental health and why I behaved certain ways or why certain things affected me in a certain way, there was a lot of generic advice out there. And I'm not taking shots, obviously, the NHS or anything like that at all, because, you know, there is a lot of support out there. But what worked for me was sitting down having conversations like this, like what worked for you. And I've actually picked up some of my biggest coping mechanisms now simply just by having a conversation.
Yeah.
And it's insane. But yeah. I genuinely dread to think where I'd be without the podcast.
Really? Why? And did you ever get like a diagnosis of depression or anxiety?
Yeah. So I still really struggle with anxiety. Mm. There's a bit of C, I always get the letters mixed up with this, complex post-traumatic stress. Yeah. So even down to like, my phone was to ring and it was an unknown number, automatically I'm thinking it's a hospital calling me. There was a period of time last year where I didn't really do a lot about it, which for someone in my position, I probably should be, if you are in that stage, do something about it. I would say I was in a depression towards the end of last year. But it's one of the biggest lessons is the fact that I know it's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
And things are always a stepping stone for me. I mean, they're tough and they're big, big stepping stones, but we can, you know, conversations like this are proof that you can overcome anything.
Yeah. And apart from podcasting, what do you then do to help your mental health?
Journaling.
Oh yeah.
Journaling is a big one for me. There's just something so powerful of getting like what's in your head out, like on paper in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably been the biggest one for me. And as well, music.
Yeah.
Like it's been there every step of the way. The good, the bad, like everything in between. And talking. Yeah. Like it's so simple. And I know sometimes it's the hardest thing to do, but the podcast again has taught me how to articulate how I feel. And, you know, if I am kind of closing off a little bit, I know, well, that's like a little bit of that's when I need to talk.
Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate to have the people around me that I do. But I think those three, and Lego.
Oh, really?
I always forget. I always shy away from telling people that I do Lego.
It's kind of like a mindfulness thing really, isn't 100%. It?
100%. And it's literally, there's just something very therapeutic about sitting down with just these little bricks and just kind of you're not worried about anything else other than what's going on in front of you. I'd recommend it to anyone.
Yeah, because you just have to focus on those instructions and those bricks.
Yeah.
So that is basically mindfulness.
Yeah.
In terms of journaling, so when I was going through my trauma with my breast cancer, I was advised to journal as well. And I found it so helpful. I can like fully understand, because I think what it is, and I've said this before on the podcast, but my friend who's a psychologist, she describes that when you go through trauma, all your thoughts are in a massive jumble. So it's very hard to process things. And then when you sit down with your journal and you kind of write it all down, it just helps you kind of process things, put them in order and make sense of it, doesn't it? Because I was very much like, oh, I don't know, I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
And I remember just like finding real sense. Yeah, it just made sense to me when I started journaling.
Have you ever gone back to certain points in your journal?
What, and read it?
Yeah.
I don't think I could.
No.
Have you?
There's been certain days and certain moments when days do get particularly hard. If you need that like boost, honestly, it's very difficult. It's probably really cringy. It's like listening to your own voice.
Yeah.
With podcasters, we have to listen to edit. But there's just something like, there's periods of times when I thought like, do you know what, I'm not going to be able to get through that. Like reading back at certain journal entries for me, I'm like, well, you didn't think you were going to get through that, and you did. So yeah, on those days, as cringy as it is. Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind. But I probably need to work on the fact that I can't go back to it.
Yeah.
That's probably not a healthy thing. You know, I probably should be able to go back to that. Sent shivers through my spine even thinking about it. What about the fact, you know, growing up as a guy, so as a boy, do you think it was harder to express your emotions as a guy rather than a girl?
What's really interesting is, from an emotional side of things, I didn't know anything different because I was raised by an incredibly strong single mom. I lived with my younger sister for a big period of time, and I was always around like my nan, my auntie and stuff, people like that. And even like one of my best friends is an incredibly strong female. So I've never really struggled to show my emotion until everything happened with my mom, because then a lot of the male family members then started to kind of like, I don't want to say call out the woodworks, but it was the only phrase that kind of like sprung to mind. And then it was like, no, this is the way it should be done. Like, this is what needs to happen. So it's almost like a barrier that was always kind of down then came up, which was again, brand new territory for me. Cause I was like, well, why can't I talk? Why can't I cry about this? Just because they're not crying doesn't mean that I can't cry.
So were you told at any point, be strong?
Always. Really? It was always like, be strong, or like, you know, what would your mum do? Or, you know, your mum's strong, you need to be strong. And it was kind of like, she is strong, but she's also taught me some incredible life lessons that if I need to cry, I need to cry. My favourite film's The Lion King. So, you know,
but that must have been hard for you as well, if you were used to kind of, you know, being at home with your emotions and suddenly being told, actually keep them in.
It took a while to kind of break that wall back down, because I realised that I'd almost gone from thinking it was a strength to then, like, it was like the past 15 years of my life almost then I was doing life wrong because I was being so open and talking about these kind of things. So I had to really kind of like unpick it, almost twice in a way.
Yeah.
It's a tough one even now to navigate, because I'm like, I have to almost check myself a little bit, because I'm like, well, am I being too emotional, or am I being kind of a little bit, am I not being emotional enough? It's a weird one, especially when being a man, because it's like, especially at the moment, obviously there's a big kind of focus on like men's mental health, and there's a big belief in that, like, we should be able to talk about anything. Obviously, like, everyone's the same. We all feel these really natural emotions. But then it's almost like, if you're not emotional enough, it's still a bit of a problem. But then if you're too emotional, it's also a problem.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, what do we do now then? Because
it's so hard. Do you remember, like, growing up, your male friends calling you too emotional or ever kind of teasing you about being open with your emotions?
I was always the dramatic one. I was always like, oh, Taylor's doing this, Taylor's doing that. But it was never kind of like, well, you've also just spent like 40 minutes winding me up to a point where I don't want to be in this environment anymore. So I would just leave. But it's those kind of things now that I won't think twice about, you're winding me up, like, this is making me feel a certain way, like, stop it. But I think everyone's on their own journey with their emotions. But it was always the dramatic part that used to really, really get to me, especially in my friendship group.
Yeah.
Because, yes, it might seem a bit dramatic to you, but you've also spent the best part of 2-3 hours, or you're kind of bringing things up that you know are quite sensitive to me. So
I'm the mum of 3 sons.
Yeah.
And my eldest son is very emotional, and I always call him dramatic.
Yeah. So, oh, okay. You're the problem.
Yeah, so exactly. Listening to you here say that, I'm like, oh dear.
Yeah.
But it is so hard because I'm the mum of 3 sons,
yeah.
I'm very conscious of wanting them to be okay with their emotions and open with their emotions. But on the other hand, and you know, you want them to cry and you want them to feel like they can cry, but then it's like, stop crying.
I think there's a mixture there, isn't there? Because it's like, there's sometimes, again, it's probably contradicts everything that I kind of like stand for, but like, if you're crying for the sake of crying, that I don't quite, you do need to kind of like, come on, sort it out now. But if, you know, things are genuinely affecting you and that's the way that your body is allowing you to kind of get that out of you or to release the tension, then Yeah, you can't control it.
No. And you mentioned there's a big push, men's mental health and talking about it, etc. Do you think it's getting better within males?
It is. And, you know, I think there is still a long way to go. But I kind of stand by his head. Like, sometimes it can be either we've seemed to have... We've made massive progress, but there still seems to be this thing like, well, now they're too emotional, or now they're not emotional enough still. And it's kind of like, well, what are we doing? Because, like, we're really kind of, like, creating these kind of spaces for men to talk and be open and vulnerable, but it's still then... almost seemed
judged upon,
yeah, as if like, oh well, they're talking about their mental health, like, yeah. And it's just like, well, why would we not talk about it? Like,
so do you feel it's kind of too conscious still, and
it's
not
so.
Natural,
yeah,
or you get the impression that men are being judged for
I think it's a mixture, but then I don't know whether it's just because we like work in this kind of like podcast kind of like side of things, so we're very aware to these kind of conversations, and sometimes I do feel like, I don't know, like the authenticity of it sometimes, like, are we talking about it for the sake of talking about it, or are we talking about it to make a difference? So it's a balance.
It's tricky, isn't it? But I'm sure your podcast has, I really do think it has helped many men especially open up, and like we said earlier, find strength in their vulnerabilities. And I wanted to ask if you have a particular highlight of your podcasting over the past few years where you witnessed that firsthand.
Yeah. And I can't tell you. So I can tell you a bit about it, but I made a promise to the guest. So I had a singer on called Leon Bailey. He's a phenomenal, like, he's so talented. He's got a song with Chasing Status called Blind Faith. Mm-hmm. I think if you heard it, you would kind of know it. Especially, obviously, being an athlete, you have definitely heard this song.
No one's ever called me an athlete. I'll take it.
You weren't. You've mentioned triathlons, swimming. Like,
I'll take it. You're an athlete.
And he came on the show, and he... was almost like, I would say, probably disarmed by, because like, as much as music is, obviously I love talking about it, also I don't really care if you've got a new single or a new song or an album. I just want to know, like, what inspired it? Like, why are you making those songs? Where does the inspiration come from? And we were having this like beautiful conversation, and he just opened up about this part of his life that I was just in complete awe of. And yeah, it was beautiful. And he literally just said, he messaged a few days later and said, like, I've never told anyone that. Like, would you mind if you like remove it? I was just like, I'm not here to set anyone up. Like, I just really appreciate you feeling comfortable enough to, I guess, talk to me and like open up about that. And it's a memory for me that I will cherish, I think, for a very, very long time, because he didn't have to tell me that.
And you created that safe space for him, basically.
Which is, and I think it's the ripple effect that it's had, not just from a podcast, but even with my male friends now, like, we're always kind of like asking twice or like about like, how are you and stuff like that. So I'm very proud of it in that respect.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's, you know, I've heard that as well recently, you know, it's all about asking twice, isn't it? You ask someone, how are you? And they're like, yeah, fine. But then it's like, but actually, how are you?
Yeah. It's a British thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrible.
So it's like, because if you're bumped into it, like, oh, you're right, mate. And then you just carry on walking. Yeah. And you're like, you're going to wait to answer.
Well, have you ever played the trick where you said, no, I'm really rubbish? And then they just keep walking.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah. It's unbelievable how people just don't listen to the answer. Do you sometimes take people's difficulties, do you think, too much?
I think... depending on what it is, there's certain topics recently that I've really started to explore with the podcast that I've never really spoken about before, or kind of like been in a space where someone has opened up about it. But sometimes if people are talking about like the loss of a parent or grief, I'm still, even though it's been 7 years, I'm still kind of like, it's still quite raw.
You recognize parts of their story and yours, don't
you? It's a tough one because... yeah, as much as obviously I'm very grateful my mum is still here, I'm almost grieving for someone who isn't dead. I'm grieving for the life that she could have had, the relationships that we could have had, like the places we could have gone. So it's the grief kind of conversations I I do struggle with.
Yeah, I still struggle with the cancer ones.
Yeah.
Like, I always know they're the ones I'm kind of more nervous about. They're the ones I feel way more, like, you know, inside. The ones I potentially, like, feel myself getting emotional. Yeah. So I think it is hard. And I think it's important for us to know how to deal with those emotions as well. Because the last thing you want to do is take, you know, that negatively, and then you leave the podcast studio with a heavier weight, because actually what we both love about it is how it makes us feel better.
Yeah,
I think 100%. That's really important. Can we talk about music, because you mentioned music before, because The Waffle Shop is also a music podcast. What does music mean to you?
Oh okay, that gave me a chill. I would probably go as far as say it actually means everything. I mean, I have no musical talent whatsoever, like none. But it's always been there, like,
really?
From such a young age, like, I had such an eclectic, like, sounds in the house. Like, my dad was almost like a 90s rave hour, whereas my mum was very like Brit pop kind of, so it was always like a real kind of like nice mix growing up. And then when I was of an age where I could go to like gigs by myself, I just had this almost like escapism from everything. For like, for an hour and a half, I'm just there dancing, listening to music with my friends, and it's just something that has just never left my side. Even now, still to this day, like, my headphones are in, or you know, I get quite, I probably missed live music more than my own family in the during the pandemic.
So it's a real passion of
yours.
Yeah,
I've just. I don't know what it is. I've just always responded really well to it.
Yeah.
Which is a good and a bad thing, because there's still songs and albums or even voices that they push me right back to a certain point.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I respond really well to music. Yeah.
So do you have one song, if you're in like a dark place and you want a song to try and lift you up?
Yeah.
Do you have that one song?
Yeah.
What is it?
The song that I always kind of go to would be Sia, Alive.
Okay.
And there's a lyric in the song, and it says, I was born in a thunderstorm, I grew up overnight. And it's just something, you know, like when you listen to a song, you're like, this is the song, this is soundtracking what is happening right now. But it's just something very beautiful. It's a song about like kind of like not giving up, and, you know, regardless of the storms, like, you're going to get through them. And yeah, even talking about it, like, I wish I kind of could show you my arm, but there's goosebumps.
Oh, really? Wow. I'm going to play that song on my way home.
Yeah, it's just a real kind of nice, empowering punch of a song.
Amazing. I've heard you say that podcasting saved your life.
Yes.
So what's the plans for the future?
Just to keep doing it. Like, I was always that kid who was told I was too chatty, or I was too inquisitive, or I was told to shut up a lot. So the fact that now it's become my job, I'm now in a position to create that space for other people. I'm very fortunate. You know, we were kind of saying about like the podcast being born out of like trauma and stuff like that. Like, for anyone listening to this, like, it doesn't always have to be a traumatic experience. Like, if you've got a passion for something, if you want to do it, like, the pandemic taught us that life is incredibly short, and time is very precious. So if you've got a passion for anything, just go and do it, because you would rather regret something that you have done than what you haven't.
It's so true, isn't it? And it's so scary taking that first leap. And I remember a friend saying to me, you know, just by starting it, you've achieved 80% more than all the other people, because most people have that idea in their head and don't actually do anything about it.
Well, you see the stats, especially from like a podcast point of view, it's like the chances of people getting past, like, I think it was like this fifth or sixth episode.
Yeah.
Like, if you get past that, you're automatically in the top like 5% in the world. So it's just kind of like, it doesn't have to just be podcasting, but we don't need more competition.
It's hard, isn't it?
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't realize how much work. Like, this is the fun bit, sitting down and having a conversation. But, you know, there's probably going to be another, 6 hours worth of work behind the scenes with this.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of work, but it's given me so much. So just more of that.
Well, you've been able to make it a full-time job, haven't you?
Yeah, which is I still struggle on a daily basis to the fact that something so beautiful has come out of that real kind of dark place. So it's really strange.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'll ever kind of get used to that. But I'm very fortunate. Like, I have incredible people around me, and they've kind of believed in me on the days that I didn't quite have the belief in myself. So yeah, I'm very fortunate to.
Yeah, you need the support. I think, you know, there's so many things you need, but the support of your community and people around
massively.
You is so important. Final question that I like to ask my guests. If you could go back in time to when things were at their absolute worst, what do you wish you could have told yourself as you were going through that?
God, that just gave me a chill again. What's happening?
There's been lots of chills.
Yeah, they're multiplying. Yeah, sorry about that. I think if I could go back, I'm not sure if I actually would say anything. I think I would watch from afar, because I had to go through that. Like, I had to experience like those like darkest moments to get to where I am now. So I think if I kind of went back and said, I'll keep going, it'll be fine, I think I probably would give myself a bit of a false sense of reality, because there's days when it's not fine.
Yeah.
You know, Mother's Day yesterday was a very tough day. Beautiful day, but yeah. It's tough. So yeah, that probably completely ruins the question. But I think I would just, things had to play out the way that they played out for me to get to this point.
It's been your journey.
Yeah.
But then comes a difficult question of if you could go back in time and change it, would you?
For the sake of my mum, yeah, I would.
That's a hard one. But maybe you would have got here today anyway, through a different path.
Yeah. I think it would have took me a hell of a lot longer because I'm kind of done shrinking myself down into boxes I don't fit in anymore.
Yeah.
So the fact that I get to do stuff like this and meet people like yourself is just like, this is what happens when you get out of the comfort zone. Yeah. This is what happens when you don't shrink yourself down. Like, there's a big wide world out there with some incredible people. So
I just really want people listening, though, to know that they don't have to go through trauma.
They don't have to go through trauma.
Because we wait for it sometimes, don't we?
Well, I didn't. I just thought I would just carry on doing the horrible IT job that I hated. Like, I felt like I had no real purpose, whereas I always had the love of finding out about people, or even like the music side of things. And like, I just, it was the judgment, like, I'm not going to explore that because people might think, you know, who am I to do that? Whereas no, forget it. Like, if you love something, go for it.
Yeah,
you know, trauma is going to happen in some shape or form regardless of who you are, where you are, but please do not let it limit you. Me and you are proof of that. I mean, I'm not saying like we're saints or anything, but you know, like, it's life is tough, but it doesn't always have to be. There are still some incredibly beautiful moments to come.
Absolutely. Taylor, where can people find you and your podcast, The Waffle Shop?
So it's on all platforms, wherever you listen to, I'm not very good at this type of things. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, if you just type in The Waffle Shop, and then probably Instagram at Waffle Shop Podcast. But yeah.
Brilliant. And I highly recommend it because I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast. Thank you. Thank you, Taylor, for talking to us today. I am absolutely confident you're helping people out there, and especially men, to open up about their emotions and find strength in their vulnerabilities.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Likewise, it's been an honour.